Raise your hand if by desire or professional certification you attend professional advancement courses, continuing education, most of us. So I was offered a scholarship to a program at the Alliance for Better Nonprofits a week ago Tuesday on board and staff development. I don't know what your experience is. Typically, continuing education courses have a few tidbits mixed in with a lot of sitting. You know me, I'm not very good at sitting. So I wanted to be back at work very quickly and visiting people and up and about doing things. But I did learn a few good things. The day was opened by Hilton Halloran Hill with a presentation that was clearly rehearsed, well rehearsed, with a great slideshow and a studied manner and a lot of enthusiasm, and not without content. And one of the things I walked away hearing was this interesting metaphor or imagery. How many days a year do you attend to a vineyard? How many days a year do you prune and plant and cut back and replant? Do you know what the ratio is of planting and planning to harvesting? I guess? 365 days a year, how many days do you actually harvest? You say five? Good guess. He said about 45. So I haven't done the math, but that's about, I think, 8%. Point being, so much of life, so much of building anything of value is planting seeds. I had a very excited moment at our board meeting last night, two nights ago. Rabbi Tal Ganzi, who is the new director of educational programs here, talked about some 4 years ago, I introduced her to an educational structure in Manhattan. And apparently she's carried that with her throughout all of her advanced degrees as an aspiration. I don't even quite recall the conversation I had with her, but it filled her up, and she's thought about it for years, and now it's actually coming to fruition in our new program we're calling Amirin, which I'll tell you more about. But that's the nature of creation and building any institution, any lasting thing of value. We're told in the parasha, not in the curses, but in the blessings, that things will be so fruitful that the vintage will overtake the sowing. I think the imagery being that it will be more than 45 days of harvesting, and the sowing will be, the preparation will be less than 320 days, that things will start to overlap and come. The grapes will come so quickly that we won't be able to stand it. We'll be winning so much we won't know what to do. So I think one of the lessons about building something of enduring value is contained in this week's parasha. A lot of this week's parasha deals with the ways in which both Behar and Nechukotai, in the ways in which we steward the land. And aside from making an important sermon and talk about environmentalism, which is an important aspect of the parasha, I think it also speaks to us allegorically about the way we steward and shepherd and prepare all things, all building projects. You may have noticed in recent months and years, the synagogue has created more and more programs. The building is busier and busier. Our staff and lay resources are more and more used. That's a good thing. It's a very exciting thing. And it can take years to bear fruit. So the Dubno Magid talks about this sort of thought experiment. What if we counted our lives not in years, minutes, and hours, weeks, and days, but only in Shmitot and Yovelot? 7-year cycles, 50-year cycles. Not in the span of an ant, but the span of a whale. Seeing the broad, seeing the long-lived, a sea turtle lives for some 100-plus years. What if we saw our lives through those lenses? How much more would we be able to plan and build and grow? So with that longer time frame and the understanding that things take 4 years, 7 years, sometimes 50 years to bear fruit, Herzl never saw the land of Israel, for example. Moses also never saw the land. Yes, correct.
The land of Israel.
Okay, thank you. That's true. That's true. So there's this counterintuitive element to building, to constructing, to giving, to leadership that started to crystallize for me only recently, and I'm ashamed to admit it's taken me this long. But among the places it crystallized was at Nashville. That leadership, I think the Israeli army knows this. Leadership isn't always about running ahead. You can't push a rope, is another thing I learned last Tuesday. That was a great metaphor. That leadership is counterintuitively about service. And that there is great joy. I think beyond leadership, there's great joy in being of service. I think I always struggle with, I think a lot of us struggle with, sort of the childhood narcissism of making sure that our needs are met. And it takes a long time, sometimes in life, a long time, sometimes we receive it quickly, sometimes we have inklings of it, to realize how fulfilling and satisfying it is to serve others. Now, there's someone in this room who is an exemplar of it. Her name rhymes with Airy Man, and she shares the same title as Donald Trump and Joe DiPietro. You're not supposed to speak of people in public, but I'll just give you those hints. And that I find inspiring, to work with such people. And there are levels, there are circles, there are concentric circles, there are means of service that create the building blocks. So, of course, the one we think of most commonly in a religious system is serving God. So again, a lot of the parsha is about agricultural law, the laws of letting the land lie fallow, the laws of remission of debts and remissions of manumission of slaves. So we see in a previous parsha that three times a year you should see and remember God and arrive before the Adon. They're speaking of the regalim. So Sforno, one of our Italian commentators from the late medieval period, says that Adon, sir, master, applies to someone who is in control of perishable things, of chattels. That's why we call God Adonai, our master. We're perishable things. We are simple things. So each year, says Sforno, this is in a commentary in Exodus, they make an appearance before God. It's as if they are being reviewed by their master. And then, referring to our parasha, the master is their master, but also the master of the soil and the land. Because it says we are just resident aliens on the land. We are simple and perishable and transient, and our lives are made full. Our lives gain meaning by service. First of all, I think most evidently in a synagogue, in a religious system, in Judaism, by serving the Ribono Shel Olam, the master of all worlds. And then there are other pieces. So some of you are called upon to serve on a committee, sisterhood, Hadassah, a local board, the synagogue board, Rabbi and Religious Services. There are groups and institutions we're called on to serve. Sometimes being a worker bee, to use sort of a local terminology, is at least as important, if not more important, than being a boss. It's really incredible and counterintuitive. I hear about Karen's career. So Karen had a lot of I shouldn't talk about her when she's not here, or even when she is here, but we'll just pretend that I'm talking about Aaron Kay, someone we don't know. So like all of us, Aaron Kay had a lot of anxiety around work and would come home with stories from work that made it very clear to me that Aaron Kay was beloved, highly respected at work. And part of that, I think, was that when she would go out to a field site, to a job site, she would clean the pipes. She would turn the dials. She didn't leave it the contracted workers, though she was a white-collar engineer, so to speak. She would get down in the dirt. I don't think she ever had a machete, but do a little bit of swashbuckling that was required to clear paths. And everyone wanted to work with Aaron Kay. So having multiple roles, fitting multiple roles sort of all at once, is also a part about building institutions and building groups and building lives that sustain and are rich with meaning. And through that, through service, we gain those things. So we have sort of a comparison or a parallel between two institutions. We have the institution of Sfirat HaOmer, the counting of the days between Pesach and Shavuot, between Passover and Shavuos, tabernacles. No, Pentecost is the English word. I work on these things so I can talk to my Christian colleagues. Coming up, I have to remember to say Korah and not Korah when I talk to my Christian colleagues. So we have a parallel verbally between the counting of the Omer, which we are in, and the counting of the years of Shemitah and Yovel, the counting of the years between the fallow periods, the remission of debts, and the manumission of slaves and accounts, the Jubilee. So one of our sages, I think he's a 19th century sage, the Tor HaAroch, looks at these various verses and notes that for the Omer, it's an issue that's incumbent upon each of us. But for the years, it's set to the high court, the Sanhedrin, to make this adjudication. We have our role. We serve others. We serve institutions. We serve God. And that service is enriching. I think some of us know it better than others, but all of us at some kernel know that there is great joy in working at a soup kitchen, in working at Second Harvest, in working at a dog shelter, an animal shelter, in volunteering at the synagogue, in volunteering at Nashville. P.S., if you are socially awkward, as we all are sometimes, volunteering at an event is a great way to control what you're talking to people. Like, I didn't have to worry about who I was going to talk to. They all came to me. It's very relaxing to work at a booth. That's a little plug for volunteering more. So we serve groups, we serve God, and we also serve individuals. So there's one of my favorite images that comes up around the holidays is the children of Maron. That there is an idea that there was some mountain or hillside pass that shepherds used to go through to count their sheep. You know that when you have a large group of sheep, you pass them through a narrow defile, and then they can go one by one, and that's the time you count them before they go in for the night or come out in the morning. So we also get this image, and of course, our sages understood God to be counting us at the high holiday time one by one. But we also get the image in Leviticus of every tenth animal being consecrated. The sense of counting, and that each individual is vital. And then we're told in this parasha that you can't oppress a slave bafarach, with hostility, with rudeness, with severe labor. The same thing that Pharaoh did to us. Another parenthetical, you can do it to non-Jewish slaves. So let's again, not pretend our Torah was a perfect document, but was a residue of its time, whether divinely given or human written, it was contained in an era. So when dealing with humans, when serving them, when understanding that a great value might be working with a refugee at Bridge Refugee Services, or anyone in this community, a big brother or big sister, I know Deborah Olashansky did it. I know she was really enamored of that experience. My dad is a third generation big brother. He had a big brother, his big brother has had a big brother, and now he has a little brother. Extremely rare. And he glows about Michael. That sort of one-on-one service, you know, like your work, Rich, is really another kind of powerful service. It's service to the world entire, to God as the maker of all things. There's service to groups, and then there's just that intimate experience of listening to a friend, of working with a new immigrant to America, of taking on a disadvantaged child as a big brother. These are really great and powerful experiences. And we know repeatedly in Torah about not oppressing the widow, the orphan, and the immigrant. But this question of bafarech, don't treat others the way Pharaoh treated you, is enumerated or elaborated by one of our sages. Don't give someone unnecessary tasks just to keep them busy. Because we know, says Chizkuni, that exploitation of slaves is common. I mean, as Kant would say, it's very typical that we treat people like a means and not an end. And that the goal of serving others, one of the things that service cultivates for us, is the awareness of someone's wholeness. That, as Deborah may have realized, I haven't spoken to her about this, that a young African-American girl who lives on the East Side is just as whole and human as we are. And just because we don't see them or encounter certain kinds of people on a regular basis, and I don't just mean this by race, but along all sorts of categories, being aware through service of someone's wholeness, of their vital place in the universe, is really powerful. And so I'm going to leave you with one of my favorite images from Rashi. So in the parsha, we're told, live beside your kinsman, even though he is in straits. In the context of, you got to take care of the poor, right? I mean, we know this. This is, I don't have to teach you that one. You've read it dozens of times. I couldn't even give you all the citations that our Torah talks about that. But Rashi, in this particular parsha, says, and Karen and I debate this, there are definitely some things that it's easier to ameliorate post facto than it is to prevent. But in Karen's experience as an engineer, with environmental causes, it's better to prevent often, or more inexpensive to prevent than to ameliorate. And probably likewise with a lot of health care. So Rashi has this great image when you deal with the poor, but it's true in a lot of cases of this service among people, service to God, service to institutions, and that intimate one-on-one service. A person, and again, so this does diminish their wholeness, but let's use the image anyway. Poverty is like an overladen donkey. While the load's on the donkey's back, you only need one guy to stabilize the donkey, right? Like, the donkey gets loaded. They're not typically riding animals. The donkey's typically a pack animal. So you load it up with your crates from the market and bring it home or bring it to another town, and you walk beside it. And I think as the donkey shifts, so from time to time you tighten the load, you adjust. Easy. It's not, once you've loaded it and it's stable enough, it's just a matter of a quick adjustment here and there. You only need one person. But if you don't do it well, if you're not careful at first, if you're not paying attention throughout the ride and it falls, woe to you. Then you need to gather a lot of people around to reload the donkey. Right? I'll read it in Rashi's word. This is like an overladen donkey. While the load is on the donkey's back, only one person is needed to stabilize the load. If it falls, not even five persons can lift it up. As I'll say further in the benediction, I just wish you all, let's all cultivate that sense of the joy of service. Yes, we all have to have our own needs. There's that hierarchy of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We need food and shelter for ourselves and our families. But all of us, I think, in this room have the capacity to serve. We're not destitute. We're not, God willing, in dire straits. So cherish those opportunities to serve, whether it's at Nashville, whether it's on a synagogue board, whether it's at Bridge Refugee, whether it's clients and patients, whether it's friends. Feel and grow and cultivate and warm that feeling of service. Being of service is really a mechaya.